Folks, if you're liking what you're getting from 30 MPC, the number one way you can support us is by subscribing to our newsletter. Every week, you only get two emails. On Monday, you get a content roll-up of everything that dropped last week. And on Fridays, I pick one topic and I personally write a deep dive on things like how to cold call, how to run a discovery call, or even how to hire an AE. So if you're liking what you're getting here, take 2 seconds, go to the show notes. You'll see a button to subscribe to our newsletter, or you can go to 30mpc.com/newsletter and do it there. We'll catch you soon. Cheers. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this leadership episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. My name is Armand Froke, and I'm here with my co-host, Mark Cosgrove. And today, another member of the Mark Cosgrove Hall of Fame, it's Greg Bauman. He is the Director of Enterprise Sales over at Outreach. And oh, man, an Enterprise Sales Leadership episode we have. Mark, why should people listen?
Well, listen, I learned a ton from Greg when he was working with me, and this is a GBE. This is a Greg Bauman episode, and when you get into this, you're going to get the acronyms out the wazoo, so listen in. I think it's great frameworks. He has a real nice methodology for several things that he does. It's easily transferable and actionable.
3, 2, 1, GBE.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. If you get an email and the action required on that email is going to take you less than 2 minutes to do it on the spot. It's not worth adding it to your to-do list, having to look at the item, remember what you need to do. That's going to take you more than 2 minutes anyway. So do it on the spot, get it off your plate. Now, we documented our best templates and tips to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that documentation for free at the link in the show notes.
This actionable competitive tactic from Clue is the trap question. Steer discovery toward the winning zone. If we're competing with a podcast that has no newsletter or webinar series, we might ask a trap question like, how do you figure out if those podcast listeners are making their way to your mailing list? And when you're in a head-to-head, there's no better way to prepare for your next competitive battle than with our trap questions and battle card templates from our friends at Clue. The link's in the show notes.
Gong's going to help you run the 5-minute drill at the end of all of your calls today. At the end of a call, pressure test the prospect with 3 questions. Number 1, do you want to buy? If the answer is no, why set a next step at all? Number 2, when do you want to buy? If it's tomorrow, we got to move fast. Number 3, how do you buy? Based on the first 2 answers, I can now adequately decide if and how I set a next step. And this was stolen from the Gong 30 MPC 90-minute masterclass, and you can steal it too in the show notes.
Here's my secret to being a sales superhuman. It's auto reminders for everything. If I expect any reply from a prospect, I press Command H, and Superhuman pops it right back into my inbox if I don't get a reply in 2 days. That means if you handle an objection, if you suggest times for a meeting, or if you ask for cuts back on red lines, always create a 2-day reminder task and assume they will not reply. So if you want to follow up on time every time, you can get a free month of Superhuman by checking it out in the show notes.
All righty, Greg, welcome to the show. We start every show with your top 3 actionable leadership takeaways. Let's get your 3.
Armand, really a big fan of weekly coaching. So for me, my sellers need to learn and earn while they're working for me. I do that through 3 key areas. Number 1 is activity. I'm looking to make sure that they are doing the right things. They're getting in the deals so they can win the deals. Number 2, I'm looking to provide strategic guidance. The best sellers are leaning into this and are actually making me support them in this. Ones who are a little bit greener are not leaning in for it. Either way, we need to make it happen. We're doing account plan reviews, we're doing deal reviews, and making sure that they have strategic guidance for how to support their customer in the buying cycle. Number 3 is call reviews. This probably could be its own whole podcast, Armand, but thinking about what needs to accomplish in those call reviews to see, are they starting this correctly? Are they hosting the meeting? Are they asking the right questions? And are they leading with next steps? Number 2, we've got to hire well. So go right now, if you've not done it yet, sit with your recruiting team and your partners in recruitment and make sure that you're doing a full rebuild and evaluation of what your job description and hiring profiles are for your team. The first thing I did coming into leadership role was make sure that we were matching what we're calling for in the market with what our top performers are doing. And guess what? It's not them being a rock star. It's them taking the next level to be creative in their deals, to show that they're customer obsessed by meeting with them on site and by understanding the value that your tool provides and by seeing your product as a competitive differentiator. Number 3, internal selling. Don't just advocate for your team. Equip them with goal, context outcome, aka GCO. I love an acronym. So in order to be the best quartile of sellers, you have to get really good at external selling. However, if you want to be in the best decile of sellers, you have to be really good at internal selling. So one of the best things that I believe the best sales leaders do is to support their sales teams internally, share their wins, escalate and articulate what those great things are that we're doing well, that are leading indicators for success. Don't wait for the boom email to happen. See when the boom moment happens and support it. The other thing that I'm doing is equipping them through a framework that I've rolled out to my team to make sure that our exec to exec communications are better than they've ever been. That's with this GCO framework. It's a quick Slack message framework that they're sending over to the EAs of our executives 2 days before a meeting to say, hey, here's the goal of the call that's coming up. Here's the key context for what's going on in this conversation. Here's the outcome that we really desire. And since you'll have 30 minutes with them, this is a great opportunity for you to learn these one or two things that you can walk away from. And I would love for you to impress these one or two things upon them that they can walk away from.
Customer intimacy dashboard. I want to know what's on it besides a smooth jazz playlist from Spotify.
So for me, it's really important. We know that as a company, we are winning deals when we're present in our customers. And being present in our customer means understanding the value that we can bring for them. And what is the thing that they hired us to do? It's a simple question that every account executive needs to understand about the accounts they're supporting. For an existing customer, you need to know what was the problem that they hired you to solve. And if you can do that, it's going to allow you to have more meetings to support that problem. So the customer intimacy dashboard that I run is I've gone into outreach and I've filtered against all of the accounts in my team's territory that have open opportunities. And then I reverse filter it in terms of when were they last in touch with us. So anytime it goes beyond 2 weeks, my team knows to expect to get an urgent task from me in terms of understanding what we need to do to get closer to this customer again, to make sure that the deal is going forward, obviously, but more importantly, to make sure that we're continuing the lines of communication that make us a good partner and not just a vendor.
So I'm thinking like there's an email, there's a meeting, there's an on-site, there's a phone call, there's these different things. Last activity feels like it bunches it all together, but those have very different connotations to them. How do you break apart like, oh, they sent an email a week ago, who gives a crap? But actually they were on site a week ago, much different. Like, how do you determine the level of intimacy? Like, are you just dating or are you getting married here?
So for me, I'm using this customer intimacy dashboard as a sort of like, let's go over here, gun dog approach, right? Like, let's go inspect what's going on. So you're right, Mark. In order for it to be a customer on-site with multiple executives, that's going to be a really valuable moment in terms of how we're considering the relationship. If it is an email that's following up with an email that's following up with an email that's not been replied to since, you know, whatever, the last Olympics, that's going to be less valuable for me. But what we're doing is using it as a point in time to understand, because Mark, if we were to come out of a really impressive meeting that had awesome outcomes in person out in San Francisco 2 weeks ago, but nothing's happened since, maybe it was not that effective of a meeting, or we've lost sight of the value that we can bring them or the value that they've come to us for.
So I'm just thinking like gaming, because we know a big part of leadership is like getting through the game of the stuff that we all used to do when we were AEs too. But like, I just hit my outreach automated sequence to follow up every 10 days. I never get on the customer intimacy dashboard. Bauman's never like that breathing down my neck. Like, seems super simple to game. How are you helping reps understand they shouldn't game it?
The next thing that I look for within this is obviously the gaming, because you're right. The easiest way to handle that is through conversation. I think that the best sellers especially are really proficient at being able to turn an ear on somebody. Anybody can spend, I can be like, hey, Mark, what's been going on this opportunity that you just keep hitting, bumping this up again, hope this email finds you welling to death, and being able to understand, okay, there's not value there. What is the value that we can create? And what's like, don't tell me the story, tell me the plan, right? So what can we do to fully understand what you're trying to do if we connect with this person? And if so, if you were to snap your fingers and say, Armand is suddenly responsive to Mark, what does that conversation look like? And if we can plan backwards from this like genie in the bottle moment, it gives the AE the clarity and direction that they need to put their experience to use. So we'll often sort of frame backwards from, hey, it looks like you're stuck in the mud here. If you were to just snap your fingers and have a meeting with them, what does that meeting look like? And what are you solving on that? And let's write for that meeting, or let's pick up the phone and speak to that meeting. So that's a big part of what we're looking at. The other thing, and not to make another outreach plug here, but this makes it so much easier for us, is I'm able to hover over within the opportunity when the next meeting set date is. So there's a huge difference for, again, you mentioned the, you know, 2 weeks ago, everyone was on site. That's a high value touch point for us. If there's another one of those coming up, we're in a great position where there can be a 2 week lull or a 3 week lull without, you know, captured activity there. But more importantly, if we're able to drive that meeting forward of there's nothing happening after this, like there's been no communication, nothing's happening afterwards, this was a T&E waste. What can we do to really be strategic here and make sure we're capturing and establishing next steps?
I never met Find You Wellington. He sounds like a boring but well-meaning person.
Find You Wellington, I think, has been doing a lot of sales coaching. He's very busy. He's hard to book.
Greg, you mentioned two things that I think resonate quite a bit. The first is, because a manager, as a leader, you need a way to quickly comb through 20, 30, 40 opportunities without sitting there and talking to your reps about every single one of them. I would always have my reps have the next meeting date at the beginning of their next steps field. So for example, it would be like 0416, 0422, 0428, right? And then I would just sort by that. And you can see how many opportunities have a date number next to them and how many opportunities have just words, which means you don't have a date on the books. And my rule of thumb was 75% of your ops need to have another meeting on the books. Otherwise, there's probably not an opportunity in that remaining 25%. The other thing that you mentioned that was really interesting was the other way you can use activity or last activity and prevent people from gaming it is if you use last prospect activity, because you can game your own activities, but oftentimes if a prospect hasn't come inbound or hasn't said anything to you in the last 30 days, that usually just means that the opportunity is dead. So on that note, Greg, like someone's following up, they're following up 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks. What's your guidance for your reps in terms of like how long they're allowed to keep something in pipeline?
One of the things that I really coach my team back to is let's go back to sort of a first principles approach. Why did this person engage with us in the first place? And if we can answer that question, we're halfway there, right? If they came to us and said, hey, listen, we've got a revenue problem. We need to understand what we can do to increase our top of funnel so we're building pipeline across our team. Those don't tend to go away over the course of 6 or 8 weeks. Right? Maybe they do. And if so, I really look forward to hearing that podcast, Armand, if you want to have them on. But more often than not, we need to understand why did they come to us in the first place? And what can we do to get back to that conversation? We're selling to and we're supporting very busy executives. We're supporting very busy people. And it makes perfect sense that we might not be number one on their list all the time. Maybe we're number three. And if you're number three on somebody's list, you're not going to get that first response. And you can still get a deal done from that. And they might have you really respectfully slotted as a number three for them. But for us, it's really helpful to make sure that my reps are aware of, are they slow to reply because it's travel baseball season and they're slow to reply to everybody right now because their kid's on a team? Or are they slow to reply because they've lost vision for the values that we can provide them? Or they feel like they can provide that somewhere else? Each of those would give us different walking away points for let's go ahead and kill it. Or let's find a new creative ways that we can become an obvious point of connection for them.
I'm kind of tight on this. And I do want to preface it by saying this is mostly my guidelines for SMB and mid-market. Enterprise is a very different beast, but like SMB and mid-market, I want the rep each week to say, this is my next step. It needs to be binary and action-based. I will book a meeting with this person. There's no ambiguity there. That's the next step, right? First week that a rep doesn't do it, I say, listen, sometimes it takes more than a week, but did you put in the effort? And if they show me they made an email, did a call, all right, great, you put in effort. All right, let's keep doing that. Second week that they haven't completed the next step, I say, listen, we need to come up with a more creative strategy. What we're doing isn't cutting through the noise. It's taking us 2 weeks to help this person. When somebody needs insulin, they don't wait 2 weeks for it, right? So we need to sell and get some urgency here. Third week, what I do is I say, listen, we're either not in a deal, we have the wrong person, or we have a completely wrong message. And we have to dial those three things in and figure out, almost, well, not almost always, but a lot of the time, it's that we just don't have a deal. We've started with the wrong person or whatever, and it's time to clean that out and concentrate on the deals you have. So, and I'd also argue, Greg, like, I love the look back, like, what have you done next? But the look forward to me is like so valuable. When is that next meeting? If your rep comes into a deal review and says, I don't have a meeting for 2 weeks, and they don't have a plan and what to do in that 2 weeks to make that deal even hotter, then guess what? Like, they're not really a great seller and you're not doing your job as a manager. Get those people prepped and ready and selling and excited about those meetings coming up.
And the thing that I would add to that too, because Mark, that's a great point. And what I would say specifically, my team, we look after our largest customers at the company. And, you know, my background is in strategic and enterprise accounts. The best thing is, again, we've got this awesome meeting coming up in 2 weeks. Down market, you're going to want to make sure that the rep is keeping that meeting on the calendar. That's going to be step one. Step two is going to be like, can we make sure that meeting is an outsized outcome for us and for the customer? Maybe that's sending over like a pre-read video or a pre-read document to say, here's what we're discussing. Let us know what questions you have, or here's what we're planning on discussing. Like, we welcome feedback on this. But then really, like, as we move to the enterprise, we know, and it's, like, this is completely validated this. And if you spend 4.5 seconds on LinkedIn or Gartner or Forrester's website or anything of that sort, you will know that the buying committees are exploding in size. So if you're resting on your laurels, waiting for that meeting in 2 weeks with one person, and not doing the work to understand who else should be part of that meeting, you're going to have a much smaller sort of outsized outcome in terms of what happens, even on a highly successful meeting.
Someone's going to get mad at me for using this analogy, but it never goes anywhere if you're going on a date with someone every 4 weeks. It's moving too slowly. Like, you forget half of the things that happen. Other things have gone on in your life. And oftentimes, deals are moving on a steady, forward, efficient cadence if they're actually going to close. So Mark and Greg, you guys see today it's April 16th, and you see a next step, and that next meeting, we'll call it it's after Cinco de Mayo, right? They wanted to make some time for some margaritas. They wanted to take some time off, or maybe they got ahead with you and they need some time to evaluate other competitors, and they want to meet again on May 15th. What should your rep be doing between April 16th and May 15th to be keeping the deal active?
So the first thing that I'm coaching people to is, number one, you want to understand why that is, right? Especially if you've built that early rapport and you've built that early connection with them. Why is this? And Armand, it could be, hey, we've taken 3 steps ahead of what we're doing for you. There's a couple of other vendors or solutions we need to validate here. Part of the process doesn't mean you're losing, doesn't mean you're winning. It just means that we need to get back to you after Cinco de Mayo, which is a big moment in the fiscal calendar. I think everyone knows that. One of the things that you need to do is sort of validate what that timing is, especially, again, for our friends in EMEA. They'll take a 2 or 3 week vacation as well. And so that could just be the next business day that they have available is mid-May, right? Coming from mid-April. So for us to really understand what that is can be really big and can set those next steps. The other thing, like, I firmly believe this, is that the B2B sales process should be way more informed by the B2C sales process than it is, and than it often is. And so for me, if I'm making a considered purchase, even if I'm not ready to hit send on that brand new M3 MacBook Pro yet, and I'm still sitting here with my M2, I'll want to understand and educate myself. I will be spending 5 or 10 minutes at a time on Apple.com's website, looking at the specs, right? Is this really what I need? I'll be looking at reviews. And so doing what you can to support that, not just by sending them a dead link and saying, serve yourself, but really showing them sort of a boutique level of, listen, ignore these emails, feel free to not reply to them. But I know as you're thinking through these items, these are moments that buyers care about and they may be of interest to you. So I think making sure that you can educate them on not only your product and why they're in it for the first place, but making sure that they're successful in sort of the non-product element of this. What is it going to take for them to adapt? What's it going to take for them to adopt? What's it going to take for them to excel once you all move forward together?
Good account plans is basically zero. They do it because their manager says to do it. It's on some stupid spreadsheet. It's some stupid template. It's got limited value. Of course, every time a rep actually takes time to do it, they're like, wow, this is super valuable. I should do this more. Like, how are you getting your good reps to do this and to show other reps that is super valuable to them?
Great question. So, you know, Mark, I'm on to make sure you don't lose your entire audience from this by saying that reps are bad at account plans. I'll say that most reps are bad at account plans because most sales leaders are bad at account plans. I've seen so many failed expectations and where sales leaders are setting up a wild goose chase in terms of what needs to accomplish on an account plan. The bar is frequently like, pull together your best McKinsey consulting PowerPoint on what is going on at global company, right? What do they sell? What are they up against? Who are their competitors? And there's so much goodness in there, but only if you let it be good. What I've done for my team is I've actually rolled out something earlier this year called an MVAP. It's a minimum viable account plan. And it's focused on the action-oriented nature that needs to happen in the accounts. It really just comprises of three questions. So high level is the hypothesis. This is something that they're supporting on their own. They're using a ChatGPT prompt to understand what is going on at the account. We can capture that in ideally two or three sentences. Maybe it's a paragraph. The second is, what is our win now? Right? So what is our first land? Here at Outreach, we do a land and expand model. We like to think, especially in the account planning motion, that we're going to take down the entire company in a single bite. It's not happened yet, right? And so being able to understand what is that first win that we can get the attention, that we can get the budget, that we can provide them to be a successful customer. And then the third is I have them call out specific people that we need to be reaching out to, given the hypothesis that they've created, and given the opportunity for us to have a first win. That is broken up into a couple of different components. Number one is who at the account are we already attached to as a key above the line or on the line contact? So this ends up looking like they will hyperlink this out to LinkedIn, or they will hyperlink this out to Outreach and say, John Smith and Mary Jones are both people that we want to reach out to because we have a relationship here. The second category is alumni and champions. So they're able to use LinkedIn Sales Navigator filters to understand, at this new account, have they come from a customer account before? And the concept and differentiation between alumni and champions that we've rolled out are, number one is alumni, right? So if I worked at Oracle a decade ago, I don't know a ton of people at Oracle still because it's been nearly a decade, but there's a sense of home or pride that people have around the places they've worked in the past. And so if I can help my team understand, hey, listen, you were with a customer of ours a decade ago and they've had a lot of success with it. How do you feel about, you know, being an ambassador for us in terms of as we get into your new company or what we would do to support you? Additionally, we have champion messaging where we say, listen, you were just at an Outreach customer 9 months ago, you rolled it out. Looks like you were the global head of RevOps. You probably saw a lot of success with us. Are you interested in running it back at your new company? And then finally, account plans really need to not only be actionable, but stretch the imagination of the account team. And so I have them do a genie in the bottle, essentially. If you were to have snap your fingers and be able to meet with anyone at the account, who would that be? And what can we do to work backwards from there? We'll take those people through the first and second degree connections of our board members and of our C-suite executives and work for a direct actionable plan to get in front of our most high value targets.
I love this idea of a first win. Like that's that kind of toe hold or finger hold that a rep needs to climb the mountain of that account, right? Like can you give me like two or three examples of really good stories of first wins and how they worked, or like what people came up with?
So a first win that I was reviewing recently with somebody on my team is she found that there was an opportunity for us to serve, I think, maybe 1,500 go-to-market folks at a net new account, right? They had bought a subsidiary of ours, and now we were sort of in their ecosystem, and this is a new account for the seller. So there are 1,500 people for them to reach out to, but they're not going to sign up for 1,500 people immediately. What's a quick win that we can have? And what we'd found was the company that they had acquired had been using Outreach for their digital sales division. So these were people who were sales development reps or inside sales folks, and they were seeing a ton of success with the platform. And it was becoming a model for them that was going to be instrumental not only into the subsidiary company, but also potentially to the parent company. So when we look at those quick wins, what my seller was able to do is she put a plan forth to the contacts that she was able to get in front of at this new parent company to say, listen, we want to go for this broader business, but there is a win now for you to be able to replicate the success of you found in the company you just acquired. Let's go ahead and make this win now. Instead of 1,600, let's go ahead and start with these 70 people, get them onboarded on the platform. And then we're able to be really tactical and specific of what does that win now mean? And it's not the signature on April 1st. It is a signature on April 1st. It is a training by May 1st. It is a successful launch by June 1st. It is this much meeting or revenue attribution by July 1st. And we'll be able to look backwards. And when you're able to have those conversations for what is that first win, you can bring everyone on the same side of the table and plan that out together.
That's enterprise selling right there.
Greg, how do you help your reps decide if they should go for the initial land or if they should try to eat the entire buffalo in one big bite?
Such a good question. I think that this is where we can kind of move from like a clean cut science to a little bit more of an art form, right? So we're constantly yo-yoing, and I know at Outreach and on my team, sort of back and forth between that. Hey, we've got 25 people right now who are willing to get on board. Do we need to roll this up to 100 people to get them started? Or, you know, do we try to aim for 1,000? Like, where do we aim for this? One of the things that I've really focused on with my team is again, just creating a culture of discovery, not only internally, but also with the customer to say, what is a reasonable amount? Like 25 people feels like an easy deal for us. It feels like it's in front of us from our side and from your side. Have a conversation about just getting that win now and that we can prove success together. Maybe it would be foolish of us to go for something bigger than that. If the customer's already come to the conclusion that this is a viable group for them to start and to see the ones they need. Otherwise, we know that 25 is a very, you know, quote unquote, even odd number that people could just say, well, I think we get budget for 25 people and there's about 25 people in EMEA that would be a great office for it. Can we do a little bit more discovery with the customer to say, okay, is this a sizable enough group that you'll be able to prove the success that you want? And if not, let's find 100 people or let's find 50 people. Let's find people that we can really prove the value of not just our tool, but of your project and your revenue goals. And so for us, it's really, it can be different every single time of do we need to take down the 25 and be a good partner? Or in order to be a good partner, do we need to take down 100 or 500 from that first deal? So I think it's about being customer oriented, aligned to their goals, and not being afraid to ask those discovery questions.
The other thing that comes to mind is we have managers, leaders, directors, what have you, from companies of all sizes and of all deal cycles. And I imagine there are some people who are doing more of a transactional sale who are like, yeah, I can't really do an account plan where it's like, first I want to reach out to employee number one and then reach out to employee number two, and then that's it. At what deal size or at what deal complexity does it make sense to start using account plans?
Why I released the minimum viable account plan for my team is because it's something that they can do like within an hour. They will do this for really every account. Okay. So my team is the enterprise focused team. So they've got about a couple dozen accounts in their portfolio, right? So it's something that's easy enough for them to knock out over the course of, call it the first month of the fiscal year. For the people that are sort of, you know, maybe we have a multi-million dollar deal, the MVAP is not going to support the amount of multi-threading that we're going to do on our side and the amount of additional research that we're going to do for the customer. And so we actually will pivot from that MVAP to an account overview plan that we have developed internally. And that's like your classic, probably 7 to 10 page PowerPoint where they're going through, okay, so who's using it? What are the workflows? What are the outcomes? Who's not using it? Who's using it well? What are our plans there? So Armand, to answer your question, I think you can start it as low as you want in terms of deal size, because having a plan is critical. I think making sure that as leaders are thinking about capturing that level of planning for their team, make sure you've got a bar that's low enough to add value to your sales team, even if they're only doing $10,000 deals in 200 person companies, all the way up to if they're doing $17 million deals at 20,000 person companies or 100,000 person companies.
Well, Greg, amazing show. Unfortunately, it's 30 minutes to President's Club, not 45 minutes to President's Club. And so we have to wrap for our final question. We talked about a lot of good habits that sales leaders can exhibit. But if you were to say, what is one bad habit that every sales leader should break today
so that all teams out there get a little bit better?
I love this question. It's my favorite part of the show. And that is lack of specificity, I think, is the biggest bad habit that sales leaders have. There's a big push to be like Mark Kosoglow. How am I going to be like Mark Kosoglow? Do I have to look handsome? Do I have to show up on LinkedIn all the time? What does that mean? And instead, what we want to do is say, I want you to be like Mark Kosoglow. He communicates in this way. He follows up at this time. So having a level of specific precision with each person on your team is not only going to help coach them up, but it's going to help you form a mental model for what it means to be successful on your team and in your organization. So be specific.
Folks, if you want to be like Greg Bauman, you want to be like Mark Kosoglow, click this one on repeat because this was a heck of a show. Everyone hang on for a 60-second recap coming up soon. Cheers.
Otter AI's Autopilot for Sales gives you the freedom to sell on your discovery calls by taking notes for you. One of the best ways to deepen your discovery is to ask your prospect about the impetus behind their goals. So when a prospect tells me they want to advertise on more sales podcasts, I'll say, well, it's not every day that you wake up and decide you want to sponsor a podcast. What's causing you to even explore this in the first place? Now, we put together the ultimate discovery checklist with our friends at Otter AI, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes. Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Woodpecker. When you're sending a sales email, you generally want to avoid putting punctuation in the subject line. If you've got an exclamation point, it makes it seem like you're shouting at them, look at this amazing offer, and a question mark just smells salesy, so avoid punctuation. Now, if you want to steal my full sales cadence from my friends at Woodpecker, there's a link in the show notes for you to go get it and try it for free. Today's deal acceleration tip is brought to you by DemandBase. If you want to save a ton of time as a salesperson and be more relevant, I recommend you prioritize your prospecting by those prospects who are showing buyer intent. It'll keep you from making a bunch of noise and reaching out to folks who aren't in market, and instead you'll reach out to folks who are in market. Now, we built a bunch of templates to help you prioritize, accelerate, and win with DemandBase, and there is a link to those wonderful templates in today's show notes. Today's deal acceleration cheat code is brought to you by Pipedrive, which is a CRM built by sellers for sellers. The best way to drive your pipeline forward is to every single day pull up a list of all of your open opportunities and look at each opportunity by stage and think, what can I do today that will increase my likelihood of winning this deal? That's how you keep your ops moving forward in between meetings that you have on the calendar. Now, we documented 5 cheat codes that can help you cut your sales cycle in half with Pipedrive. There's a link in the show notes to steal them.
Alrighty, Mark, it's time for a 2x2 recap. Give me your 2.
2x2. Number 1, I love this idea of what's the first win we can get in an account. Like talking about it, visualizing it, strategizing it. It's like I said, the toehold or the foothold that allows you to like climb that mountain deal. I just love getting started is the most hard. This is the most difficult part. Like get started and that first win does that. And then number 2, I'd never thought about the difference between alumni and champion. Alumni is somebody that hasn't been there for a while, but there's still some nostalgic pull. Maybe they know a couple people, but like there's some kind of innate desire for them to help a company they used to work for. The other one is a champion. You just left. You got connections. You know people. I need you to help me out. Like you're still working there. I thought that that was a really useful designation to talk about breaking into accounts.
Number 3, last activities, next meetings. Those are the 2 ways that you can very quickly skim through 20, 30, 40 opportunities and figure out what's real in your pipeline. And number 4 is if you find that there's not a meeting on the books, you might use Mark's 3 steps to finding BS pipeline. Number 1 is, did you even follow up with the opportunity? If you did, maybe in your second week, you might need to find a creative way to get a response. And then number 3 is if you're still not getting a response, at that point in week 3, you might realize that you don't have a real deal and you might need to go contact someone else. Alrighty, folks, so if you like this one, go connect with Greg Bauman on LinkedIn. And recently, we've been writing more leadership stuff on our newsletter. So whether you'd like to forward it to your reps or consume some content of your own on how to be a great sales leader, go check it out. It's just 30mpc.com/newsletter, and we will catch you in the next one.
Gong's going to help you run the 5-minute drill at the end of all of your calls today. At the end of a call, pressure test the prospect with 3 questions. Number 1, do you want to buy? If the answer is no, why set a next step at all? Number 2, when do you want to buy? If it's tomorrow, we gotta move fast. Number three, how do you buy? Based on the first two answers, I can now adequately decide if and how I set a next step. And this was stolen from The Gong, 30 MPC, 90-minute masterclass, and you can steal it too in the show notes.
Today's deal acceleration tip is brought to you by Demandbase. If you want to save a ton of time as a salesperson and be more relevant, I recommend you prioritize your prospecting by those prospects who are showing buyer intent. It'll keep you from making a bunch of noise and reaching out to folks who aren't in market, and instead you'll reach out to folks who are in market. Now, we built a bunch of templates to help you prioritize, accelerate, and win with Demandbase, and there is a link to those wonderful templates in today's show notes.